I'm halfway through reading a book about Calvin and Hobbes right now. It was put out by ECW Press, which is a Canadian publisher. It's called Let's Go Exploring Calvin and Hobbes by Michael Hingston. And it has been bringing back just a lot of fond memories. It's like there are parts of it just describing the strip that have been like giving me goosebumps. Because Calvin and Hobbes means so much to me, and I don't think I've ever really thought in a serious way about why it means so much to me.
What is the thesis of the book, if it has one?
Some of it might have to be this idea that Calvin and Hobbes seems to be one of the rare, universally beloved artworks. Even if you go online, there's virtually no dissenting view of it. You know, it positions Calvin and Hobbes as this strip that has this astonishing simplicity. And in its simplicity, it leaves so much ambiguous. And those ambiguities mean different things to you as you get older. For example, the basic idea of Hobbes's existence.
Oh, man, yeah.
The strip never directly comes down on, you know, is Hobbes real or not? Bill Watterson, in his small number of interviews over the years, has said basically, it's two different competing versions of reality. You know, to Calvin, Hobbes is real, and to the adults, Hobbes isn't. And, you know, I find that whenever I revisit Calvin and Hobbes, I find it a much sadder comic strip than I used to. And I'm much more conscious of the fact that Hobbes isn't real.
Well, when I was a kid and I would read Calvin and Hobbes, you know, the frames where Hobbes is just back to being like a stuffed animal, my interpretation of that as a kid was always like, well, it's because Calvin's mom is in the room or something. So Hobbes, it's his disguise.
Like Toy Story.
Right, exactly. It never occurred to me, well, Hobbes is just a projection of Calvin's imagination.
I think I understood that Hobbes was Calvin's imagination, but as a kid, you have different relationships to objects, right? Objects can be imbued with so much more significance. This is something Watterson gets at in all those strips where like Calvin's got a box. And the box can become like a time machine or a transmogrifier.
Or when they're all those beautiful ones where they're going down a hill on a sled and they're having a conversation and then all of a sudden they're just like, you know, going through space at light speed or something.
And, you know, kids have a much different relationship to space than adults do. Because their worlds are so small, their worlds become much bigger, right? Like, you never get a sense of how big is the forest behind Calvin's house. You don't really get a great sense of the geography of the house. It's just very expansive. What was your relationship to Calvin and Hobbes growing up?
I just read a lot of it and really loved it. I think even as a kid, you know, even not quite, I think, fully understanding kind of the implications of the Calvin and Hobbes universe, I think I did recognize that it was a lot wittier than other comics. Because, I mean, I used to read, what did I read? I mean,
Garfield?
Fortunately, I never really got into Garfield, which, I mean, that's amazing to revisit as an adult because it's just like unbelievably stupid. It's like there's three jokes. He hates Mondays.
He's fat.
Yeah, he likes to eat a lot. He especially likes lasagna. And John is a big loser.
Yeah.
Those are the three jokes. I also, I guess, read Tintin, which kind of felt grown up, I guess.
Did you ever like the superhero comics?
Not really. I read Asterix and Obelix a lot. Mm. Did you ever read them?
No. That stuff was a little too foreign for
me. It's a little too smart and historical for you.
Yeah, you know, give me Batman, give me Garfield, you know, the good characters.
I was into Batman as a kid, but I was never into, like, the comics. Like, you read the Batman comics?
Yeah, but, you know, even as a kid, the comics were a bit intimidating because it was this, you know, this vast and expansive universe, and storylines would continue across months or years.
Right.
And it was too much to keep track of. I just liked the pictures, basically.
Right. Well, anyway, I think I understood Calvin and Hobbes to be a lot kind of wittier and to have some politics to it. I mean, I think sort of like The Simpsons, I probably didn't get a lot of the jokes. For example, I remember a strip where Calvin is getting, he gets a magazine that he subscribed to, and it's a magazine for gum chewers. Do you remember that
one?
Yes. Hobbes says, I can't believe there's actually a magazine for people who chew gum. And he's like, are you kidding? There's a dozen such magazines. You know, he's listing off, you know, this one appeals to the gonzo chewers. This one is for, you know, like, and he's going on. And it's, you know, it's a satire of kind of niche advertising and marketing and stuff. And, you know, the stimulation of desire artificially. And I didn't understand that. I just thought it was funny.
I mean, what you grasp onto as a kid is what a realistic portrayal of childhood it is. Calvin is not, you know, a sanitized, cute child. he's like a bundle of contradictions.
He's a shit disturber too. He's always giving Susie a hard time, and he's making noise in class.
Well, you know, he's a little asshole, frankly. Like, he's a friendless kid, okay? But it's not like there's no reason he has no friends. But also, he is like smart beyond his years. He's very impulsive though. Like, he's a child in so many ways. And, you know, he's like a nonconformist, too. He hates playing organized sports. He likes Calvin ball.
He hates authority.
He does. And by the way, this is one of the reasons Calvin and Hobbes appeals to kids, because it's a comic that talks about how bad school is, you know. There's one comic where he fantasizes about dropping a bomb on his school and blowing it up. And
well, it is funny. You know, there's a funny contradiction between your desires and your fantasies as a kid, because on the one hand, you know, you don't understand the implications of anything or the weight of anything. And that can go like one of two ways. On the one hand, you can be like, you know, what if like the Easter Bunny was real, or like, what's Santa going to bring me for Christmas? And on the other hand, you could be like, you know, what if like, what if we like dropped a bomb on the like field where the kids I don't like play or something? You know, you can just, those can exist in your head simultaneously.
Mm-hmm. And the strip also gets at like the total powerlessness of childhood.
You know, yeah.
He has no control whatsoever on his destiny. He has to go to school. I mean, most of us are powerless, frankly.
You know what else he was really good at was, I loved the parents. I loved the kind of satire of like middle-aged parents. There was a really amazing strip. Sometimes the best Calvin and Hobbes strips are like no more than two or three frames. And there's one where in the first one or two frames, Calvin is just making these snowmen. And then in the final frame, you see that the snowmen form kind of a like a gauntlet in front of the driveway, and they're all saluting, and the dad has to like come home from work, and he's just thinking, I hate it when he does this.
I find the parents much more sympathetic figures than I did when I was a child.
Yeah.
And you know, another one of Watterson's kind of masterstrokes is that he leaves so much about them ambiguous. Like, we don't know their names. We don't really know where the dad works. We see very little of their relationship to each other. It's only through the eyes of Calvin. Also, when I read the strip now, it just seems like just a much sadder strip than it ever did before. The last comic, you might remember it, where I think it was published on New Year's Day, 1996. It's a very simple comic where Calvin and Hobbes go out in this snowfall. Oh, there's so much new snow, whole new world, whole new possibilities. Let's go exploring, something like
that. I'm getting goosebumps. I'm thinking about it right now. I'm getting goosebumps. Let's go exploring.
And I remember as a kid finding that, like, I was kind of like, that's the last strip. Which, you know, I was a kid. I was stupid.
Oh, man.
And, you know, what's so great about it now is that it doesn't wrap anything up. It doesn't end with Calvin, you know, growing up.
It's not like an Andy and Toy Story situation, right? Where he just forgets about them or whatever.
But I also find this strip, and now I'm getting goosebumps too, I find it so melancholy because, you know, you look at it and you think, this can't actually last forever.
Well, and like, you know, the snow is just, it's like how childhood is just this perfectly like uncorrupted carte blanche where you can just project fantasy and adventure, and then one day it all just goes away.
And like, is this the last good time? You know, there's a whole new world with a whole new possibilities. Does that mean leaving Hobbes behind?
You know, I've always thought about buying it, but isn't there like an anthology that just has all of the...
Yeah, I've got it.
Do you have that?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I should get that.
You know, there's another good one. Did you ever have the 10th anniversary book?
I think so. I might even have it here, yeah.
It's great because it has Watterson's like commentary on it.
Oh, yeah. No, I do have that. Yeah, yeah.
And you know, he talks in there about... An amazing thing about him was he vetoed any licensing for the strip. And he had this big standoff with the Syndicate, which sounds like a criminal organization, and perhaps it is. But they're the people who own the rights to Calvin and Hobbes and distribute it to newspapers.
Right.
And, you know, in the early days, for the first, say, half of the strip's existence, you know, he had this pretty bad contract where they could license it however they wanted, but anytime they would ask, you know, can we get you on board for this, he would say no, and I'm going to walk away if you do license it. And then about midway through, he renegotiated the contract where it was in writing that any licensing had to be approved by him. And so since then, he hasn't licensed anything.
And is he still alive?
Yeah, he is. He's a recluse. He's like J.D. Salinger.
Bill Watterson, come on Michael and Us.
Yes.
That would be amazing.
I'd like to get him on to talk about, you know, his views of, because he thinks that, you know, having a line of, you know, like Garfield style merch that would corrupt the strip.
Oh, man.
And he turned down, you know, Steven Spielberg wanted to make a Calvin and Hobbes movie. Like, he turned down millions.
If anyone knows Bill Watterson, tell him to come on our podcast.